welcome to the Commerce Committee. Appreciate everybody who's here for our committee today. I do want to make mention it's MMA Day at the Capitol, so welcome. Love seeing the white coats in the room, and appreciate you guys visiting the Capitol. I hope Representative Brand gets to introduce his visitors as well, but I'll allow you to do that. We have a quorum. And so the first order of business will be to move the approval of the minutes from March 3rd.
Madam Chair.
Representative Stevens.
I would move the minutes from March 3rd.
Representative Stevens then moves the minutes. Approval of the minutes from March 3rd. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no.
No.
The cheese stands alone. The motion prevails. Our first bill on our agenda today is Representative Brand's bill, House File 2974. I will move that House File 2974 be re-referred to the Education Policy Committee. And is there an author's amendment as well, Representative Brand?
Yes, there is.
I will move the author's amendment, the A20 amendment. Is there any discussion to the author's amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The bill is in front of us in the shape you desire. Representative Brand, please introduce your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. First, I need to introduce some students from Nicollet High School who are also here today, Superintendent. And I was lucky enough to also have the mayor show up from Nicollet, Minnesota as well. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Welcome to the committee, everybody.
And, you know, this bill is kind of an interesting bill. I was approached by the school district and Superintendent Morrow earlier in the fall asking me for some possible legislation in order to get them into compliance with what they're doing right now. So a couple of years ago, they were doing a raffle for their student prom. And the student prom was actually held off-site at the Nicollet Conservation Club. Since then, the school board decided to have the prom on-site in Nicollet at their school. And they still wanted to continue to have the community engagement piece with that raffle to help fund that prom for students. And so that's why we have House File 2974 here today. The author's amendment is actually kind of an interesting amendment. And so I had Matt Getman, who's sitting right next to me here from the Gambling Control Board, and he suggested that we amend the bill a little bit, and that's that author's amendment. And what that would do is give school boards local control in order to decide whether or not they wanted to do this sort of thing, and then also give them some accountability by providing a report saying, here's what our activities are, here's what we're doing. And so I really like that idea. I contacted the Minnesota School Board Association last night, and they said that'd be great. We would be happy to support that. And so I did provide a letter. It should be in each one of your packets, I believe. And that discusses their support for the bill. And now I'd like to turn it over to Logan Shea. He's the school, the student body president, if I'm not mistaken. And Logan will kind of take it from there and kind of give you more in-depth information about that, the situation.
Welcome to the committee. You can introduce yourself and for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and the members of the committee. My name is Logan Shea. I'm from Nicollet, and I am the student body president. Nicollet ISD 507 is a smaller district school, and we're halfway between St. Peter and New Ulm. We're a predominantly an agribusiness community with a long, proud history of independence. Last fall, we became aware of a statute that makes us concerned about our specific legal status. For the past decade, we've used 50-50 raffles as a funding tool to raise money for our prom held at school. It used to be held at our conservation club outside of town, but these last 3 years, we've moved it to one of our gyms. And now that it's at the gym, it's not completely compliant with the law. So under the Minnesota statute 609.671 in subdivision 5, we're compliant with all conditions except 4. We'd just like to change that a little bit if possible today. So in subdivision 5 under condition 4, it says half of the gross receipts must be awarded to the winner. and the remaining half may only be expended to defray the school district's cost of sending event participants to high school activities held at other locations. So our prom is not held at another location, it's at our school itself. So today we'd like to either say that our community center, which the prom is held in, is a part of an other location, or that we can reword the condition in number four. So on the behalf of the fellow students, would you be willing to change the amendment four to allow the school board sanction raffles even if they are applied to events on campus? We believe this would clarify the intent of the statute as we try to help our students with every very expensive part of the school year, which is prom, and then remain completely compliant with the specific wording of the law. We also believe this would aid every other school in Minnesota as they meet the academic, musical, athletic, artistic, and social needs of their students.
Thank you for your testimony. Do you have anybody else who wishes to testify on your behalf, Representative Brand, or are you here just for technical support? We appreciate it very much. Is there anybody else from the public who wishes to be heard either for or against this bill? Seeing no one, you did a great job. I have to ask Representative Davids what the mascot of the school is, because you know them all.
The Nicollet Raiders.
Well done. See?
Is it? Usually I go Tigers or Cardinals, and I got a 50-50 chance. It's the, what's the name of that, Madam Chair, what's the name of that really good meat market there? We get Christmas presents every year.
Schmitz.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Take the...
treats from there.
Yeah, there's like a honey... Yeah, you should have brought treats from there. There's like a honey sausage sticks or something. Or
the jalapeno. Oh.
No, I don't like those. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Amazing. Davids. I knew that you would do these kids proud, so
I know
you're
my
on the map.
Sticks.
Member discussion, any questions for Representative Brand or his testifiers?
All right.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. Obviously, it's not part of the change, but just looking at the rule in general, in line one on the amendment, I believe it would be line 1.18, tickets may be sold to persons 18 years age or older attending the event. You know how that is enforced at the events?
Representative Swazinski, I think that we've got somebody who could speak to that. If you want to just go ahead and introduce yourself. And
yes, Madam Chair and Representative, thanks for the question. Matt Getman, the Executive Director of the Gambling Control Board. The amendments, this is not one of the requested amendments for that, but the oversight is really what Representative Brand was referring to before. So the educational school board, local authority, will now have more oversight of who's actually being sold to. They'll actually have the authority to dictate whether or not there's any restrictions as far as how to check and actually follow up. And that's really why we are endorsing this particular proposal with the amendment, is to give some more oversight.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So would the school board then be responsible or held legally responsible for any tickets sold to people under the age of 18?
So, Madam Chair, Representative, so that is the point back to the local control. So the school board would be able to set up their own rules. So it wouldn't have to be across the board, across the state, in order to enforce just that. So if they want to have everything from a deposit, or if they want to have some other restrictions they want to put in, and then ultimately that's on item number 9 on 2.7 refers to their ability then to restrict that same organization or that same party from ever being able to apply for a raffle again.
Thank you.
Representative Swazinski. Representative Katizawatun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Brand, thanks for bringing forward this bill. I just have a quick clarification. So actually in line 1.8 in the amendment, or actually 1.9, where it says, at a high school event sponsored by a school district and at a school district location. I'm curious, do we have to have that in the bill in order to have the event take place at a school district property, or is leaving that or including that in, does that take away from school districts being able to have hosted or sponsored events outside of school district location? I'm wondering if it's would that regulation would cause an adverse effect.
Who'd like to answer that? Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative, thank you for that question. That was one that my staff had actually come up with. One of the issues that we're running into, and again, our mandate is to ensure the integrity of the games. is to, in this carved out excluded group for the high schools, to limit it to just those school locations. And so what we have are we have bars, or we have some maybe bad people out there that are wanting to trick the students into holding events at other locations or for other purposes. And so we're trying to put those restrictions in here that the school board would be the ones to enforce.
Any follow-up, Representative?
Thank you. I guess I would be concerned if another school district were to continue hosting their prom at some local community place that is not a school property, would then they not be able to have this type of a raffle, given this addition to the amendment?
Representative Brand or Mr. Getman, any response?
Madam Chair, Representative, that is the case. This is meant to be, again, for school activities that are endorsed by school boards. And so in this particular case, they could potentially, be restricted from it by having this language in here. So it would potentially be changed, if you would like, then to address that issue as to a school-approved or school board-approved location.
Okay. Any additional questions from members? Seeing no additional... Seeing no additional questions, I will renew my motion that House File 2974, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Education Policy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and you are on your way. Thank Go you. Raiders.
The next item on the agenda today is House File 3032, and Chair Halverson, if you could maybe explain the schedule for this item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you can see, there are a lot of people who want to be heard on this bill. It's an important bill, and we want to be sure that our testifiers have time. And so we will take all the testimony today, but because we have to go into session, we'll have a hard stop at the end of our committee hearing, and we'll move to a vote for next week. So we will take all our testimony today.
Thank you. And because we're not taking action today, I don't believe there's any motion necessary, so I'll just turn the floor over to you to discuss the bill.
Mr. Chair, just if I could procedurally.
Yes, Representative Driscoll.
Thank you. So we're going to hear from testifiers today because the bill's not in our possession right now, so we're doing a hearing on it, and then we'll take action. Will that be time for members to ask questions, or do we want to have member questions? As the chair said, she'd like to get all the testifiers in the bill off. I'm just kind of curious about the procedure so that we know as members when questions are going to be appropriate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Driscoll, for making that clarification. I neglected to say that we will do a member discussion at that time as well, so that everybody who's here from the public has time to be heard on the bill, and then we can have our thorough discussion.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, Chair Halverson. And I know we don't talk about money things, but there's about a $200 million hole in the budget if we would pass this bill. Does this tax, will be short on tax collections? Does this go to tax committee? Will that be the motion next week?
Chair Halverson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, there won't be a hole in the budget. There is not a tax item that is included in this bill.
Well, Representative, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, we're going to be collecting about $200 million less in revenues. I'd say that's a implication to the budget.
Chair Halverson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, it actually is not part of the budget forecast, so it doesn't have to go to taxes. And as we discussed, we want to be sure that the public gets to be heard on this so we can continue that conversation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. I mean, you know, this bill isn't going to go anywhere in the Senate, so I guess it really doesn't matter, but it seems a bit odd to me that when we're going to be $200 million short if this bill was put into law, that we don't account for that somehow. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Maybe we can proceed now to the testimony. Chair Halverson, I don't know if you want to explain the bill or for sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll explain the bill briefly. This is an idea that's time has come. So my bill actually takes aim at the number one reason that kids have been turning to e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes, as we know, have become an epidemic in the state of Minnesota and around the country. And it's not just me saying that. The Surgeon General has declared that vaping use in our country has become an epidemic. So today I am presenting House File 3032, and this takes an overdue step to fight the youth tobacco epidemic. The bottom line is we've left the back door too open for far too long when it comes to flavored tobacco products. Youth smoking has gotten to be at a historically low rate in the state of Minnesota, and we should be very proud of that. But the skyrocketing use of e-cigarettes has wiped out decades of gains with huge numbers of students, even those who would never have smoked, drawn to addictive nicotine. More than a quarter of Minnesota 11th graders and over 10% of Minnesota 8th graders are vaping. In the past 3 years, 8th grade vaping has nearly doubled. 8th graders, these are 13, 14 year old kids. Think about the number of kids in your district that this represents, your communities, and even your own household. I appreciate that we've got high school students in the audience and physicians in the audience, because I'll tell you, I've been working on vaping issues for the past 5 years, trying to stave off this epidemic that we were facing, knowing how kids have been targeted by tobacco companies over the years. And while adults have said, boy, we should really take our time and not attack this issue head on, I'll tell you, it's the kids who have said to me every single time when I said I'm working on vaping issues that they say it needs to be done. And so I'm here because there's no doubt that e-cigarette manufacturers like Juul have been targeting our kids, even as young as 8, advertising on websites like Nickelodeon, hosting school programs, hosting summer camps, to make sure that they are normalizing vaping and normalizing tobacco use among kids. Kid-friendly flavors are a big part of this problem. E-liquids come in a lot of candy flavors that are super kid-friendly, like gummy bears and Skittles. They also use mint or menthol marketing for mint-flavored chemicals that are added to tobacco products. Now, the federal government does have the authority to regulate all tobacco products, but has failed to do so. Last September, the president promised to ban all flavored e-cigarettes, but that ended up being only a temporary ban of some candy-flavored items, and it's just a fraction of the kid-friendly products that are currently out there. In recent months, new high-nicotine disposable vapes and refillable pods that escape regulation have flooded the market. This one was new to me, the Puff Bar. I'm going to pass it around because I want you guys to smell it. And it smells pretty delightful and delicious and tempting. If the page could pass some of these things around. In addition, we've got flavored cigars, nice green sweets. We've also seen mint and grape and all kinds of kid-friendly flavors with cigars. And, of course, the Juul products, which Juul has invested heavily. Altria, which is part owner of Juul, has invested heavily in making sure that these are the products that are getting into kids' hands. I've got another E-Puff, too. Watermelon smells just like a Jolly Rancher. In addition, we've got menthol cigarettes. Now, these have been part of the tobacco marketing product for years, and they're pretty ubiquitous. Menthol has been used specifically to target the African American community in America. You're going to hear more about this, but when you look at disproportionate rates of death and disease in communities that are targeted by big tobacco, it's time for us to take a stand. The other thing I can pass around is this lovely little cartoon emblazoned product, which is e-cigarette juice. Unicorn Drops is the name of the product. Again, very kid-friendly looking marketing.
That's good.
Yeah, it smells delicious, doesn't it? So today you're going to hear a lot of misdirection from people who are currently profiting off of tobacco use and e-cigarette use in the state of Minnesota. And make no mistake, we've made a lot of gains on tobacco use in Minnesota, but tobacco remains the number one cause of preventable death and disease in our state. So e-cigarette companies are going to say that their products help people quit smoking. The U.S. Surgeon General has studied this and have come to the conclusion that there is no conclusion on that claim. Surveys show that e-cigarette users are leading young people toward addiction and not away from it. When you look at trends and rates of who are using e-cigarettes, this is about addicting people. This is not about helping people move away from addiction, especially when it comes to kids. Now, cynically, when we sued the tobacco companies many years ago, we discovered that tobacco companies referred in their own internal documents to children as replacement customers. So they have found their replacement customer market in flavored tobacco products and e-cigarette products. The other piece of evidence that proves that e-cigarettes are not a way to quit smoking is that the e-cigarette companies directly sued the FDA not to be regulated as a quit smoking device. So the reason they're not regulated or recognized as a quit smoking device is because they chose not to go through the process to find out if indeed their products had efficacy and safety to be considered a quit smoking device. In addition, you're going to hear that flavors help adults, but flavors are luring millions of kids and keeping communities of color addicted to deadly menthol cigarettes. More than 5 million teenagers in the U.S. are using e-cigarettes, and 7 in 10 say they started using them because they come in flavors I like. Big Tobacco doesn't care which nicotine products people are using. They own devices all throughout these categories in the marketplace, and they are profiting off of addiction in our state. They're going to say that a flavor ban is going to be harmful to business. But I will tell you, having worked on trying to reduce rates of tobacco use and reduce death and disease from tobacco in Minnesota, we've heard these claims before. Minnesota passed a tax under Governor Pawlenty to increase the price of cigarettes, which keeps tobacco out of the hands of kids, and we were told it was going to harm businesses. We passed a Clean Indoor Air Act in the state of Minnesota that is comprehensive and protects all workers, and we heard it was going to help business or hurt businesses. But we know, those of us who get out once in a while away from this place know that restaurants and bars are thriving. So before we hear testimony, I just want to let you know what this bill does. It right-sizes penalties on retailers who violate the law. They haven't been changed since 1997. It ensures that existing administrative penalties on individuals apply when they sell or give products away to people in our state. And it covers alternative penalties for minors caught selling or giving flavored tobacco products to others. Our goal is to make sure that kids and adults who are addicted to tobacco have the ability to turn away from addiction and not have to suffer from addiction. And so the penalties are in place not to harm people, but to make sure that we are not getting these addictive products into the hands of kids. It also provides that Minnesota localities can take action as they see fit if it's going to be stronger than state law. Local governments have led the way on this. We've got 15 communities who have already put some type of flavor ban into place. And finally, we clearly define what tobacco products are, and there is a clear definition. We've tried to be ahead of tobacco companies in the past by how we define tobacco, and we lost. So this is an attempt to be more comprehensive in state law, that they don't get to sneak other nicotine addiction products into our marketplace and addict our kids. So this is a consumer protection issue, and the Minnesota lawsuit in the 1990s was a big part of how come we know how Big Tobacco targets kids, and targets communities of color. And this is not the first time that we've taken issue with flavored tobacco in the state of Minnesota and worked hard to protect kids from flavored tobacco. In fact, we just a decade ago, Governor Pawlenty took swift action when started to introduce flavors like pineapple and chocolate mint to our marketplace, knowing the impact it was going to have on kids. And he moved to have Minnesota outlaw those flavors. Congress beat him to it by passing a prohibition, but I think it demonstrates that this protecting our kids is really a bipartisan issue. Since that law passed, however, new products and new flavors have exploded into the marketplace, from menthol cigarettes to flavored little cigars to flavored chew and now flavored e-cigarettes. It's time for us to close the door that we have left open for far too long and get these kid-friendly products off the market, including menthol tobacco products that have harmed communities around our state for far too long. We've sat on our hands, and now it's time to take bold action and not just reduce, but reverse the youth nicotine epidemic that we are facing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. We'll now take testimony. A number of people have signed up to testify. Mr. Brown will be monitoring the time. We've asked everyone to limit their testimony to 3 minutes. He will be holding up signs when people have a minute or 30 seconds. Please be mindful of that given the large number of people who have signed up to testify. I will try and say who the next person is so they can be ready to pop in so we can try and move expeditiously. And I believe first we have Laura Olivan. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, Laura Olivan, Minnesota Department of Health Tobacco Control Manager.
Thank you. And after she concludes her testimony, the next testifier will be Latricia Vitar. So the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here today to reiterate the Walz-Flanagan administration's support for prohibiting the sale of all flavored tobacco, including menthol. And as all the doctors in the room know, restricting flavored tobacco and nicotine products will go a long way to protecting youth and adults from nicotine addiction, and Minnesotans who have been targeted by the industry and suffered disproportionately from the devastating and deadly health impacts of tobacco and menthol use. In 2017, commercial tobacco use by Minnesota's high school students spiked for the first time in 20 years, with more than 1 in 4 students now using commercial tobacco in some form. After decades of progress and success reducing youth tobacco use, this is alarming. The e-cigarettes on the market come in record high levels of nicotine, harm youth brain development, and prime the brain to be more susceptible to addiction, both on a near-term basis with e-cigarettes and cigarettes, and long-term to alcohol and drug use. According to the FDA, 96% of youth who start using e-cigarettes did so with a flavored product. Flavors are more likely to keep youth vaping. In fact, in Minnesota, 2 in 3 high school students who use tobacco on a regular basis report using flavored tobacco. These flavored products, including menthol, have been aggressively marketed to youth, African Americans, American Indians, and the LGBT communities. Not surprisingly, these populations report much higher rates of menthol use than the rest of the population. We did a qualitative study of American-born African Americans in the metro area and found that 88% use menthol. At the same time, 86 of all respondents supported more laws to reduce the harms of smoking, and a whopping 69% of African American smokers expressed support for restricting laws further. We also know that some adults who smoke are interested in using e-cigarettes to quit cigarettes. According to the new Surgeon General report on cessation, early research to date is not conclusive on whether e-cigarettes are effective for quitting smoking. E-cigarettes are not currently approved by the FDA as a quit smoking aid. We need more research on whether e-cigarettes are effective for smoking cessation, and we certainly need to look at the long-term health impacts on the mind, the lungs, and the body. In the meantime, we have 7 FDA-approved medications that more than double your chances of quitting, as well as free counseling and additional supports to help people quit commercial tobacco. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next testifier is Latricia Vitaw. After that will be Pat McCone. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and then you can testify.
Thank you. My name is Latricia Vitaw, and I serve as the Director of Health Policy and Advocacy at North Point Health and Wellness Center in North Minneapolis, and I am also a Minneapolis Parks Commissioner. I'm representing Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation, a coalition of about 60-plus organizations protecting youth from tobacco addiction. I also co-chair the Menthol Coalition, a group of advocates fighting the specific problem of menthol in the black community. Menthol is an anesthetic chemical that makes it easier to start smoking, easier to inhale, and harder to quit. And for decades, the tobacco industry has marketed menthol cigarettes specifically to African-American people, advertising in black publications and neighborhoods, sponsoring concerts. They even used to drive around black neighborhoods passing out free samples. Today, 88% of black smokers smoke menthols. So it's no wonder why African Americans have the highest death rates and shortest survival rates for most cancers. Also, black people are 53% more likely to die from heart disease than any other diseases. And smoking is the top related disease. Now, research shows many black smokers say if menthol were banned, they'd quit altogether. Yes, again and again, menthol gets exempted from flavor bans, including a new federal restriction on e-cigarettes, which I think is pathetically weak. Menthol is also a very popular e-cigarette flavor. In fact, I recently talked to some middle school students, and I guess I thought vaping was very different in the community, but it is not. It is like, it's really hard to shock me. I've been doing this work for over 15 years. And when I heard what kids said about vaping, I was beyond shocked. And what I heard them say about menthol products specifically as related to vaping was even more shocking. Of course, black people aren't the only people who are hurt by menthol products. They're popular among all demographics, including kids, Latino populations, LGBTQ, and of course, straight white people. In Minneapolis, I work to help pass an ordinance restricting flavor sales to adult-only stores. Unfortunately, what we've seen are tobacco retailers getting around it. They're putting up walls and claiming they're two separate stores instead of one, that type of thing. That's why I'm happy Representative Halverson's bill takes on such a strong stand. It's a full ban on flavor product sales, not just designating which stores can sell them. Turns out that's what's necessary when tobacco sellers don't want to follow the rules. We've tried to do it the other way, and that is not working. So I really believe this is the way to go. In the last few weeks, Minnesota residents were polled and asked if they support a full flavor ban. The poll found that 74% of residents support prohibiting the sale of flavored tobacco products, including menthol cigarettes. Support was even higher among African Americans. Thank you.
Thank you. Next,
I'm just going.
Thank you for that testimony. Next is Pat McCone. After that will be Anna Grace Hottinger. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Halverson, for bringing this forward. I'm Pat McCone. I'm a senior director with the American Lung Association based in beautiful Duluth. Just like Minneapolis, Duluth has a policy that restricts flavored sales, including menthol, to adult-only tobacco stores. And like we heard from my colleague Latricia, we have also seen tobacco retailers trying to wiggle around the intent of the policy. Anytime there's a change in business practice, it's natural to be frightened to establish business owner. My family are business owners, don't sell cigarettes, my brother lays carpet. So we saw it in bars and restaurants. I am of that era where we fought for smoke-free bars and restaurants that were worried about the disaster from indoor smoke-free air laws, and nobody would come out and drink and nobody would come out and eat, but that just didn't happen. I actually live over the bridge in Superior, Wisconsin. I'm that border town. I can tell you unequivocally, more convenience stores have gone out of business in Superior since the flavor restriction in Duluth than any that have gone out in Duluth. As a matter of fact, Duluth has actually had a number of new convenience store locations open since the flavor ordinance. So there's that. And what I want to stress is this isn't about business models. This is about health. So I would encourage us not to go down the rabbit hole of economics and how we're going to fill this proposed deficit or that, but talk about the health impact and the economics of health. Because there is a financial loss to all of us, whether we smoke or not. Actually, smoking is responsible for $3.9 billion in excess medical expenditures. That's a per capita expense of $593 for every person in Minnesota, not counting an additional $4.3 billion lost to productivity. So if you want to talk dollars, let's talk healthcare dollars. Representative Helverson mentioned that this is also a consumer protection issue. Wow, if we aren't in the middle of an epidemic and talking about things. But let's talk what happened when E. coli hit lettuce. Nobody said, how are we going to help those romaine lettuce growers? Let them put them in a special store with a label on them. People can decide whether they want to wash it and eat it. We took it off the counter. We took it off the shelves. It's not restricted to certain contaminated food, we think, stores. So remember, tobacco is the only commercial product that, used as directed, kills half of its customers. Basing a business model on this product needs to be changed. This proposal addresses tobacco as it should be, a health issue. A true prohibition on flavored sales will work in all our communities, rural, metro, outstate, greater state, rural state, whatever you want to call us, and protect people equally. We all breathe the same. Thank you, and I encourage you on behalf of the American Lung Association to support this bill.
Thank you. The next testifier is Anna Grace Hottinger. Following that will be Dr. Alex Finn. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Anna Grace Hottinger, and I'm a junior in Shoreview. I strongly support getting rid of all flavored tobacco products in Minnesota, and I've worked on several local campaigns to achieve this goal. Tobacco use is a big problem in our high schools. The bathrooms have become the vape rooms where people go to vape. As many of my peers like to call it, the jewel room. I also see classmates vaping outside and at parties, as well as using flavored cigars like Swisher Sweets and menthol cigarettes. We have been told that smoking is bad for us, but flavored tobaccos, and especially e-cigs, are perceived differently. People think it's cool or a status thing to vape, and before they know it, they can't stop. They come in many shapes, sizes, and colors, and even flavors. They're easy to conceal, and teachers and parents often mistake e-cigarettes for flash drives or other stuff found in backpacks. These products also don't leave much odor, so you can use them anywhere without anyone knowing. Some students even have special devices for them to hide their vaping, such as a hoodie, this hoodie. And you can vape in through here in these little strings. There are also vaping watches that look like an Apple Watch. And this is it. You like press a little button, and just like pops out. It's a little vape. It looks exactly like my Apple Watch. And vapes that look like lipstick. This one always gets me. You just vape in through there. So it could be like, you know, you just put on your casual lipstick. Vape tobacco constantly claims it isn't targeting young people. But seriously, who do you think these products are designed for? Would you be just smoking your little thing? I feel like you would just, you know, go upstairs and smoke like anybody else would outside. I see videos on TikTok and Snapchat where kids brag about vaping in class, and even see these kids selling products to other kids. Like, every day I see kids selling them online. I've even seen tobacco ads on my homework website where I go to get help with my obnoxious calculus homework. I try to stay away from it, but it's everywhere. Tobacco use takes a toll on our futures long before serious health problems start showing up. Once students are hooked, it's more likely to distract them from class, sports, clubs, and even a job. Flavors are a huge part of the attraction to kids. Getting rid of flavors will help my friends from becoming addicted to tobacco products and stay healthy. We were hoping to go for a smoke-free generation, but that obviously hasn't happened, so I'm hoping that we take leadership for the next generation to come. Thank you for your leadership, and I hope you'll support this bill.
Thank you for that testimony. Next is Dr. Feng, and after that will be Emily Anderson. Awesome. Fang, welcome to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair. So first off, I'm Dr. Alex Fung. I am a resident physician at the University of Minnesota. I also practice at the VA Medical Center as well as Hennepin County Medical Center. And I just want to say, for all of you guys who aren't as jazzed up about this, look how many of the medical community, physician community are here. This is amazing. This, and I've also been fighting for this since med school, so I am super stoked to be here. But either way, it is no surprise to anyone that the tobacco industry is bad. But you may not be aware of how deliberately they've used flavored tobacco and menthol to hook new customers. Candy flavors are extremely attractive to kids and young adults. A common industry phrase is that adults also like flavors, which is true, but anyone who's ever been around a child knows that they are drawn to candy like June bugs to a porch light. The cigarette companies are well aware of this. Their own documents show that they looked at borrowing research from candy companies to find out what more they could do to attract youth. Because their brains aren't fully formed yet, kids and teenagers are especially vulnerable to addiction. That's what makes it unforgivable that Big Tobacco would lure them in with flavors like grape, mint, and even chocolate. Kids know that cigarettes are bad for them, make their clothes stink, their teeth yellow, all sorts of bad stuff. But there's a lot of misperception around e-cigarettes, especially since it smells and tastes like mango and other candy flavors, as Madam Chair had brought up earlier. And so research shows young people underestimate e-cig's addictive nature and don't even realize they even sometimes contain nicotine. Medical professionals such as myself worry about e-cigarette use because brain development continues well into the early 20s and youth are more susceptible to addiction because their brains are still forming. Nicotine also harms the adolescent brain itself, interrupting learning and priming young brains for addiction to cigarettes and other substances. I want to make one thing clear. No form of tobacco is safe. Smoking remains the leading cause of preventable death and disease, killing more than 6,000 Minnesotans every year. And regular cigarette causes things like cancer and COPD, otherwise known as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It will likely be decades before we fully understand the health effects of e-cigarettes on the lungs, heart, and organs. But e-cigarettes are not safe. In addition to the harm to brain development, research shows that flavorings and e-liquids are shown to be harmful when inhaled and can inflame and damage the airway and lung tissue. And as for the menthol ban, that is literally a life-saving proposal. It is estimated that if menthol were banned within 40 years, there'd be a 10% reduction in overall smoking prevalence, and 600,000 lives would be saved, a third of them in the African-American community. The U.S. Surgeon General report on cessation makes it clear that enormous health gains can be achieved if more people quit tobacco. It's a false choice to encourage our neighbors to trade one nicotine addiction for another. I hope every smoker who wants to quit will work with their healthcare provider or call Quit Plan to help quitting for good. Let's all come together to make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Emily Anderson. Following that will be Emily Myatt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Emily Anderson, and I'm from the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota. Our organization analyzed convenience industry documents to gain a better understanding of what policies that prohibit the sale of flavored tobacco would mean for local retailers. We looked at industry reports from the National Association of Convenience Stores, Nielsen, as well as many peer-reviewed journals. We conducted this research because the tobacco industry has historically cited astonishing numbers when discussing the impact tobacco prevention policies will have on their profits. For instance, during the fight for clean indoor air, the tobacco industry assured us that businesses would face hundreds of millions of dollars in losses if people were no longer able to smoke in bars and restaurants. When we started to see similarly astonishing numbers in relation to flavored tobacco policies, we felt compelled to look at the numbers ourselves. What we learned from the industry's own numbers is that tobacco is a declining source of profit for convenience stores. More people go into convenience stores for packaged food and drinks, which is where the data shows stores make most of their profits. The tobacco industry often presents tobacco sales data as opposed to profit data, therefore inflating the importance of tobacco to the store's bottom lines. In recent years, the Minneapolis and St. Paul City Councils overcame significant opposition from the tobacco industry to restrict the sale of menthol tobacco to adult-only shops and liquor store. At the time, the tobacco industry warned of financial losses ranging anywhere from $36 to $73 million in each of the cities. Again, because these numbers were astonishingly high, we did our own estimates using convenience industry reports. Our estimates for decreased profits due to a menthol tobacco restriction were $6.2 million in Minneapolis and $4.7 million in St. Paul. In other words, the tobacco industry was predicting profit losses that were six times higher than our estimates, which again were based on the industry's own reports. While we understand this decrease in profits is not insignificant, We should remember that it pales in comparison to the $7 billion financial burden placed on Minnesota from tobacco-related medical expenses and lost worker productivity each year. Our organization also works closely with the City of St. Paul's Department of Safety and Inspections in enforcing and implementing that city's tobacco regulations. Since implementing their flavor ordinance in November 2018, the number of license holders in the city has remained steady at 242, which is the total number of tobacco licenses allowed in St. Paul. If the tobacco industry's predictions had panned out, we would have seen a major reduction in the number of tobacco license holders in the city. It's just not the case. Prohibiting the sale of all flavored tobacco products would send a clear message that Minnesota will not stand by while the tobacco industry profits from addicting a whole new generation. The impact this policy will have on retailers is not enough to jeopardize the lives of our young people. I urge the committee to support Representative Halverson's proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Emily Myatt. After that will be Josh Sindler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of Chair Halverson's bill. My name is Emily Myatt. I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, the nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. The tobacco industry uses menthol, candy, and fruit flavors to attract the next generation of tobacco users. There are over 15,000 flavors on the market, including menthol, cotton candy, and gummy bear. Let me repeat that, 15,000 flavors. Flavored products have reversed the decades of progress Minnesota has made in reducing youth tobacco use. Youth e-cigarette use has skyrocketed. The manufacturing and marketing of e-cigarettes are not regulated. E-cigarettes are not subject to the same legal restrictions to which cigarettes and other tobacco products are required to follow. E-cigarettes are advertised on TV, radio, online, social media, and at sports and music events. E-cigarette manufacturers use the same marketing practices so effectively used by other tobacco manufacturers to target youth and mislead consumers about the effects of their products. E-cigarettes are not approved by the Food and Drug Administration as a safe and effective cessation product. In fact, in Minnesota, 44% of adult e-cigarette users and 72% of youth young adult e-cigarette users have never smoked cigarettes. Flavored e-cigarettes have been designed to lure young people into addiction, one they may have never happened into in the first place. The dangers of flavored tobacco do not just start and end with electronic cigarettes. Big Tobacco has spent decades manipulating its menthol product line to appeal to kids, communities of color, and the LGBTQ communities. Flavors such as menthol make it easier to start and harder to quit. People with lower incomes and folks living in greater Minnesota continue to smoke at disproportionately higher rates, and this is not by accident. The tobacco industry continues to go after these Minnesotans. You've heard, tobacco use costs our state more than $3 billion to treat the diseases caused by smoking, and much of that cost is connected to cancer treatment. More than 1 in 4 cancer deaths are tied directly to tobacco use. The tobacco industry targets Minnesotans and profits off of them, leaving our residents to deal with diseases like cancer and our state taxpayers to pick up the cost, $593 for every Minnesotan. The bill before you is a key way to reduce youth tobacco use and cut off the cycle of marketing, addiction, disease, and death. Please vote yes on House File 3032. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Josh Sindelier, followed by Ashley Olson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Again, my name is Josh Sindelier. Sorry, I'm the first time I've spoken in public in a while, but I'm a construction worker. I work with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 292. I've been doing construction for about 7 years now. I do not have any ownership in a tobacco or vape shop, affiliation with production or manufacturing. I'm merely just a consumer. I started smoking cigarettes during high school, grabbing a few cigarettes every once in a while from a friend of mine until I was old enough to purchase them for myself. I stopped smoking around the end of 12th grade, but picked up again after my first year of college in Mankato, Minnesota. I smoked for another 7 years, and I started to feel, or I smoked because I liked the feeling that nicotine gave me. It was not for the smell, and it was definitely not for the taste. Towards the end of the 7 years, I tried to quit. I tried cold turkey. It did not work. Neither did gums and patches. What worked for me was vaping. A close friend of mine introduced me to the products and the options of flavors, and it stuck. My last cigarette was on February 14th of 2017, and I have been tobacco-free since. I am no longer a smoker. I am a vapor, and there needs to be a separation between the two. Not only do I feel better, but I could taste, I could breathe, and frankly, I smell better. Vaping led me to groups of people that had other or that also gone through the same things, and people who were just trying to quit smoking but still enjoyed the feeling of nicotine. We all enjoy flavors. In fact, every product that was sent around, how many smelled it and could say, yeah, it smelled good. We all enjoy the flavors, whether our age, or depending on our age, it doesn't really matter. But we all enjoy it, whether it's fruity, it's sweet, it's sour. But limiting adult options, these flavors that we wanted to escape in the first place, does no good. Personally, my preference is lemonade, and it's produced right here in Minnesota, locally, by its own shop. The vaping industry is not big tobacco, and even it's not even giant corporations. It's small businesses. Banning these flavors does not hurt anybody other than them. It hurts the small businesses, and it hurts people like me. Banning flavors will hurt local businesses as well as leading to the closures, which will send myself as well as other vapers back to cigarettes. This ban, like I said, it affects more than just me. It affects everybody. I hope everyone can at least see that I am just a consumer. I have nothing to do with anybody making it, making the company, making the products, making the juice. I hope you strongly oppose this bill because my life is at risk here. So, thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Ashley Olson. Following that will be Charlotte Hickox. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, everyone. So a little background about me. When I was 15, started smoking Camel menthols, got to a pack and a half to 2 packs a day by the time I was 18 years old. When I was 20, I was introduced to the vaping industry by a friend similar to what he was. And let me just say, I am now 25, and I have been nicotine and tobacco free for over 2 years. So I know there's no research saying that it helps people quit smoking, but I am a success story on that part. Now, I did hand out these right here. I teamed up with Josh Hassine from a vape studio, and we do have another solution. There's always more than just one solution to a problem, and a prohibition like this is not the answer. There is a different answer, and like he said before, we are not big tobacco. We are our own individual companies. We are small businesses. We are people in the community. And there's so many people I have helped as a store manager at Pure Excel get off of cigarettes, get down to zero nic, and eventually get rid of their mod. I'm not in it to keep people addicted and keep them coming back to my store. No, I'm in it to help them get off big tobacco products again, not the same as vaping. And that's my job as a store manager, is to help people with that. And this solution right here that we have come together to make can help. It's not a prohibition, sure, but it's enough to help reduce teen vaping rates. And the thing is, everyone keeps saying, oh, it's the flavors that have them addicted. That is not true. I do have a stepson who was in middle school. And I asked him this weekend, I said, you know, both me and your mom vape, I said, are you addicted to it because of the flavor? And he says, no, I've never even tried it a day in my life. And I said, if you were to try, do you think it'd be the flavor or the nicotine that got you addicted? He's like, it would be the nicotine. Exactly. The nicotine is the issue here. So, in conclusion, please take a look over both of our proposals, because I don't have enough time to go over both front and back. It's also sent to everyone's email that is also sitting here in this room. Please think about another solution. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Charlotte Hickox, followed by Bruce Newstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commerce Committee. My name is Charlotte Hickox, and I'm the Regional Government Affairs Manager for the Vapor Technology Association. VTA is the leading national trade association for all aspects of the liquid nicotine vapor products. To be clear, Juul and large tobacco companies are not members of VTA. The proposed flavor ban on liquid nicotine will only accomplish 3 things, none of which I believe are the goal of this bill. If enacted, this bill would ultimately send countless adults who have made the switch from traditional tobacco to vapor back to cigarettes, create a black market for illegal vapor devices and liquid nicotine, and finally, ultimately shut down hundreds of small businesses in the state, leaving thousands without jobs. Late last summer, all we heard in the news were reports of lung illnesses and deaths from, quote, vaping. But as we've since learned, the term vaping can encompass many different substances. I'm sorry, I got my pages out of order. As we've learned, as the liquid nicotine vaping industry contended all along, the illnesses and deaths were unfortunately from illegal THC products that were most likely bought on the street and from the black market. These products contained vitamin E oil acetate that was used in the illegal production of THC. As one can imagine, oil should not be inhaled directly into the lungs. The CDC has absolved the liquid nicotine vaping industry from any causation of these horrific instances. Additionally, as we've heard today, health organizations would have you believe that every teenager is using an e-cigarette and is doing so because of the flavors of liquid nicotine available on the market. First and foremost, VTA fundamentally believes that liquid nicotine vaping devices are adult-only products. Further, we have supported the move from 18 to 21 to be able to buy them the products, as well as enacting meaningful marketing standards. However, we cannot ignore the fact that teens are not choosing to vape because of the flavors. The most recent National Youth Tobacco Survey conducted by the CDC provides some insight into youth behaviors. In the 2019 survey, 22.4% of those surveyed said that flavors were a reason they tried the products. In other words, almost 80% of respondents said that something other than flavors led them to trying e-cigarettes. On the flip side, we do know that flavors play a huge role in adults successfully making the switch from traditional tobacco. Additionally, we know from the United Kingdom's Royal College of Physicians that e-cigarettes are 95% safer than traditional combustible cigarettes. A ban of flavors doesn't just remove the flavors from the shelves of stores around the state. The ban will ultimately kill the $335 million vapor industry in Minnesota. That also includes putting 2,300 people out of jobs and leaving $114 million in wages and benefits left behind. Further, we know the federal government has enacted two recent laws, including raising the age of purchasing products and a ban of the pod system flavors. That ban just went into effect nearly a year ago. And on that, I'll leave it. You can read the rest of my written testimony. Thank you
very much for your testimony. The next testifier is Bruce Neustadt, followed by Tom Bryant. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Neustadt. I work for the Minnesota Retailers Association. We're a collection of small, mid-sized, and large retailers across the state, some of which sell legal tobacco products. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I wanted to briefly take a moment to encourage the committee to think of retailers as partners in denying sales and access to underage youth. The partnership that exists today between retailers, state government, and local governments is essential in that mission. In fact, the success of that partnership and the high rate of passing compliance checks in Minnesota results in us receiving millions of dollars in federal block grants. In 2014, the Minnesota Department of Health announced that Minnesota leads the nation in compliance, and for fiscal year 2019, our 94.7% compliance rate that we're very proud of helped the state leverage $24 million in federal block grants. These funds are only awarded to communities and states that exceed federal compliance guidelines, and retailers are proud to be a part of this successful system. I suspect you may hear more today about the idea of moving flavored tobacco products to age-restricted stores. I think it's important to remember that federal law already makes it illegal for a retailer to sell products to Minnesotans under 21, regardless of the type of store. And with that law, it simply just doesn't make sense to take a product and have it be sold in one store versus another. Doing so would create a classic case of winners and losers, or favoring one retailer over the other when we all operate under the same law. You've already heard about the Federal 21 law that took effect immediately upon being signed in December, and I think you'll hear and have heard more about the FDA regulations that took effect earlier this month, or apparently in February, and upcoming in May 12th. I know across the country there's a feeling that the federal government doesn't get anything done, and I would submit actually this is maybe one area where the administration and Congress got something done and did it together. And our preference would be to see those federal regulations kick in and see the impact that they have on the sphere in which this bill is attempting to regulate. I've personally seen Chair Halverson's work here at the legislature for many years and have a great amount of respect for her, but I'd ask that you defer to the work that the federal government has done and before taking a look at this particular bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The next testifier is Tom Bryant, followed by Ross Amundson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Bryant, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association, the State Tobacco Wholesale Group. My focus will be on the new federal regulations affecting tobacco products. Recently, Congress and the Food and Drug Administration took three significant actions to regulate tobacco products. First is the law that Bruce Neustadt just referenced, raising the legal age to purchase tobacco to 21. Each state under that law is required to adopt an age 21 law. The second action occurred just last month when the FDA required most flavored cartridge-based electronic cigarettes to be removed from the market. Why? Because the FDA research showed that the vast majority of youth who do vape use flavored cartridge-based products. Those came off the market as of February 6th, just several weeks ago. The third action that the FDA is going to take place will be on May 12th of 2020, about 2 months from now. That is the deadline for manufacturers to file what are called pre-market tobacco applications, or PMTAs, with the FDA. A PMTA is an application that seeks approval from the FDA to keep a tobacco product on the market. Under federal law, any new tobacco product that was introduced in the market between February 15th of 2007 and August 8th of 2016 has to have a PMTA filed. That's an 11-year time period. If a PMTA is filed, the product can remain on the market for 12 months while the FDA reviews the application. If it's not filed, the product comes off the market. In order to have the FDA approve a PMTA, the FDA must find that the product is, quote, appropriate for the protection of the public health. Otherwise, it would have to be removed from the market. What does all that mean? First, hundreds of tobacco and vapor products are subject to the PMTA filing requirement and must be approved through a vigorous FDA review process to remain on the market. Second, the PMTA process is very involved and very expensive. Many manufacturers will not have the capital or the expertise to file these with the FDA. Third, numerous tobacco products will likely be coming off the market because PMTAs are not filed. Finally, if the FDA denies the applications, then even more products will come off the market. So with many tobacco products potentially coming off the market as of May 12th, the legislature should allow the FDA and Congress and the federal laws and regulations to work rather than proceeding with a statewide flavored tobacco ban across the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The next testifier is Ross Amundson, followed by Matt Seymour.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ross Amundson, and I own Amundson Cigar and Candy Company in Bloomington. My company is a wholesaler of tobacco products, liquor store supplies, and other products to Minnesota retailers. We've been a family-owned business since 1938. I started working in the warehouse when I was 7 years old. I'm here today because I am concerned about House File 3032. This legislation would ban and prohibit the sale of 220 different flavored cigar products, 219 flavored smokeless tobacco products, and 170 brands of menthol cigarettes, totaling over 600 items. That kind of broad prohibition would be devastating to our wholesale business and to our retail accounts who service the adult consumers of these products. All this legislation will do is force adults who cross state borders to buy their tobacco products and encourage a massive black market and increase the ongoing tax avoidance already here in Minnesota. I believe that the best way to handle the issue of the flavored tobacco products is to let the federal government and the FDA regulate the industry. I strongly urge you not to pass this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Matt Seymour, followed by Madalena Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. My name is Matthew Seymour, and I welcome the opportunity to address the committee. I come from beautiful Brainerd, where I own four gas stations. I bought my first store in 2003, so I've been working in this field for 17 years, and now I have four stores. We employ just under 50 people. I'm very proud of my stores, and very proud of my team, and I'm very proud of how we operate in our community. So I wanted to address some of the impact of a ban like this would have on stores such as myself and other stores as well in the industry. I obviously work in my stores, but I have a lot of connections both with the Minnesota industry and the industry nationwide. You know, we're trying to get higher wages for our employees. We're trying to get more benefits. We're trying to get time off, and I know there's certainly there's a great movement for that. So preventing us from having access or being able to sell products is counter to that. It's a tough industry. Retail is tough. So while we want to treat our staff better, it's really hard to feel that we're being disabled by legislation like this. It also hurts border stores and also border communities. We've heard from Duluth. And from what I've read, anywhere from 30 to 40% increase in those items outside the Duluth market. Other retailers on the borders between this great state and the other states have significantly been affected by higher taxation and some of the other controls that are put in place for a whole variety of products. I met a retailer down in Iowa who was just ecstatic. He got tens of thousands of dollars in sales every week from Minnesotans. Tax dollars going to Iowa that we desperately need here in Minnesota. So we want to do something that's successful. I asked my son, he's 16, and he laughed at the ban. The kids get them online, they're smuggled from other states, or they're even stolen. So he just laughed and said, there's no way this legislation will have any effect. He was point blank about it. So you want a solution. I wish I could take you online, I could bring up my security cameras. We scan the ID of every single person buying alcohol and tobacco in my stores. It doesn't matter whether you're 21, 61, or 101. We have a solution. We can stop these sales. We want to be part of your partner. I'd appreciate you if you listen to what I say, protect and help our industry, but also we want to be able to help you in achieving some of these goals, and we can do it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Madalena Morgan. Following that will be Melissa Peterson.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Madalena Morgan, and I'm with Bobby and Steve's Auto World. It's a family-owned convenience store chain, and I had the pleasure to go with the company. From minimum wage working overnights, I am one of their top executives. So this business has allowed me to live the American dream. I'm not arguing that smoking is bad and definitely think it needs to stay away from children. I am a mother of three, a 16-year-old, and two toddlers, and I don't want them to smoke. But I also know that we are very, very conscious retailers, and we do everything in our power to make sure that we only sell to legal adults. I've seen firsthand what happens with the ban. We have half of our locations in the city of Minneapolis. Sales have shifted to the other areas, have shifted to the other stores, where the product is still legal, or they shift to other items. So we've seen grow in other tobacco products. We're not solving the problem. Our Minneapolis locations have lost a lot of revenue, and because of that, we had to cut our payroll. We stopped reinvesting in our infrastructures. I know that I'm huge passion for convenience stores, and they're very important in our cities. They're a safe haven, and they're a representation of our states. Everyone stops at a convenience store. If you go on a road trip, if you go out of town, that's how you actually judge other states, is by the convenience stores that you visit. So we are convenience stores, and sometimes we're the only place that you can get your bare necessities. This bill is making it very hard for our business model to survive. I will reiterate, we are responsible retailers and focus only on the brands and items legal adults want. We don't sell any of the items shown in here. I don't even know where you can buy these. And I have a 16-year-old. I'll ask him. I just want to make sure that by trying to do good, we're not hurting the community small stores. I can guarantee that kids are not getting these at our locations. I can guarantee this. I bring my kids to work with me, and they're not even show curiosity about these items. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Melissa Peterson, followed by Maher Safi.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Melissa Peterson. I am part of Bobby and Steve's Auto World, as Madalena had said that she had grown her adult life in our business. She's been with us for 19 years. Bobby is my father. I lost my brother a couple of years ago. And we love people. Okay. I noticed that I'm the only one who doesn't have a written speech because this is from my heart, and I'm passionate about people, and I'm passionate about the laws, okay? And rules are there for a reason, okay? We are a responsible retailer. We ID every person who comes in to purchase every tobacco product, every 3-2 beer product. That's what we do. It's part of our policies. It's part of our procedures. There are ramifications if they are not used. So I am urging, it's more than financial. It's the community. Look, adults struggle with this issue. And like the gentleman said, it didn't matter. He liked flavors, but it helped him quit smoking. We have four people in our one location that I'm based out of in South Minneapolis. Four people, three technicians and an office leader who have smoked their entire lives. Okay, our office leader smoked for 29 years, and she quit smoking 2 years ago. She used the e-cigarette, and she says, you know what? I'm just going to quit. It's not an easy habit to kick. There are alternatives. If the end mission is to be tobacco-free, I'm not a smoker. I have a six-year-old daughter. I don't want her to smoke. She comes to me. She comes with me to work every day. She sees it, and she's like, you need to stop doing that. It's bad for you. So I'm urging you. There are more. If there were more people who cared about people who wanted to just help them quit smoking, those options are out there. Again, our technicians, stressful, need a break. Three of them have quit smoking. It's a big feat to quit. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Maher Safi, followed by Sue Synth.
Mr. Chair, dear House representatives, I would like to tell you the facts. The FDA just passed 21 plus. It is now the law. We need a lot of data to come in first before we can act on something new, such as banning flavored tobacco. So this was passed just a couple of months ago, and it is the law already. The age to use tobacco is already 21. Vaping is illegal to buy and use to anyone who is under 21. If you pass this, you are only punishing local businesses and literally shutting down our business. I own several tobacco shops around the Twin Cities here, and my life will be greatly affected. Businesses do check IDs. They follow the law. Online sales, online businesses do not check IDs, and Snapchat does not check IDs. That's where all the kids are getting their vapor products. And the question is, you had mentioned that flavored, the epidemic and the problem is with youth using flavored tobacco products. Why are you including other tobacco products in this law? It's been in the market for 100 years, and it is a declining industry. Smoking rates have dropped from 35% in Minnesota to 11% in the past 25 years. And nationally, almost the same, according to the CDC and the FDA. And they continue to decline without any further restriction. Now, we carry other products other than vapor in a tobacco store. It is an adult-only establishment that checks IDs. We do not allow anyone who is under the age of 21 to enter the establishment. So we are responsible business owners, and we feel we are being disadvantaged here. We carry other products such as hookah tobacco, which I haven't heard any youth using any hookah tobacco or pipe tobacco or rolling tobacco or chewing tobacco. These are for older adults. Mainly pipe tobacco has a lot of flavors, such as cherry. My customers are over 50 years old. Those are the ones that use the flavored tobacco. They're not going to appreciate this. And so I would like to propose just a couple of things. If you must do something, we need to have some education programs for the youth, which has not been mentioned, and we need to finance that, and increase fines for businesses, maybe ban online deliveries of tobacco products instead of punishing the local businesses. And if you must, we can all agree that tobacco stores do not allow anyone who's under 21 to enter, so therefore there will be less access than convenience stores or grocery stores. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. The next testifier is Sue Sint, followed by Jason Cahoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Sint. I own Simply Vapor. I'm a co-owner of Simply Vapor. We manufacture a vaping liquid in Minnesota. So we are not big tobacco. With all due respect, I'm just a mom that found my 23-year-old daughter started smoking. I was able to raise her through grade school and high school. She didn't smoke, she didn't drink, she didn't do drugs. She was a great kid. Sent her out into the world, and she came home smoking. Now, I'm a scientist, and at the same time, I was learning about vaping. So I did the research, and I looked into it, and, you know, I discovered vaping was better than smoking because smoking involves combustion and tar. So I encouraged it, and then I discovered that the products that were available were low quality. They were coming out of China. The ingredients were questionable, and so we started making liquids. We researched and we figured out the quality ingredients. It costs a lot more money to make our own product, but it was much safer, and I knew what was in it. And then we started you know, providing it for our friends and family, and based on the results that I was seeing, I decided I need to sell this product. And I started selling it to stores. And I sold it to stores because they provide the quality control. People go to stores and they know they're getting something that's got a form of regulation. I wasn't going to sell my product on the streets. I don't want kids to get it. Stores will card people. So I started selling my product to stores around the state. Now, most of those businesses, they're small businesses. They're primarily minority-owned. The liquids that I make are very low nicotine. The highest strength is 24 milligrams, and it's really not even that popular. The most popular strength is like 6 milligrams or less than 0.1. Okay. So if you ban flavored tobacco products, you know, the federal government has already banned the pods and cartridges, and those are the high nicotine products. And now if you further ban these flavors, now the vape shops won't have anything to put on their shelf but tobacco. I mean, they're not going to open tobacco. They don't want to sell tobacco. They're trying to get away from tobacco. And the tobacco shops, now they're going to have empty shelves. What are they going to put on their shelves? Tobacco. If you're trying to get people away from tobacco, banning flavors just makes tobacco available. We don't want tobacco. Now, will it hurt my business? Maybe. Am I concerned? No. I'm a powerful creator. I will create a new business. I know how to make stuff happen. You know who I'm concerned about? The consumer. You're taking away options from people who are trying to do the right thing. They're trying to save themselves. And what are you doing? You're taking away their healthy. They're trying to be healthy. They're trying to make the best decision. So with all due respect, this bill doesn't provide what you want.
Thank you for your testimony. And just for everyone who's going to testify, no, we're not going to do any applause. And anyone who's going to testify, please address your testimony to the chair and to the committee. The next testifier is Jason Cahoon. After that will be Nathan Affield.
Good afternoon, Chairman and Committee. I'm Jason Cahoon. I have a shop in both Rochester and Winona, so rural surrounded. Okay. More in the rural community. I started about 4 years ago when I myself started vaping instead of smoking, an 18-year habit that I had. One thing I think that's kind of interesting is flavor products have been around for 13-plus years, and only in the last 2-3 years have we seen a big increase in youth use. I think we can attribute to that a few different brands and methods of marketing, and maybe we could look at limiting those avenues instead of just eliminating small business. I've heard a lot of people say that there's no studies or, I mean, hard to say proof, but that vaping helps get rid of, or helps people quit smoking, but there are a number of studies, if a person's willing to look and read into them, that support just that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier will be Nathan Affield, followed by Benny McWilliams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Madam Chair. My name is Nathan Affield. I quit my multi-pack per day cigarette habit with a root beer flavored vape from an age-controlled store called Smokeless. The ability to choose lower nicotine levels was incredibly attractive to me, and it's a big reason why I quit cigarettes. Smokeless hired me a decade ago, but I'm not here on their behalf. I'm here today to defend my job. Back then, it was just a hunch, but now I know that vaping has the power to completely eradicate smoking. We're not Big Tobacco, we're not Juul. Smokeless is one of many dedicated and responsible local vapor retailers in the state. We're on the front lines against the youth use and experimentation of tobacco. We proudly display our compliance checks on the wall. We firmly believe in our commitment to the community and to the law. Smokeless has always taken ID checks very seriously. We required IDs before they were required by the state. Way back in the day, we implemented child safe caps before they were required, and now all of our stores are 21 plus, even as you at the state consider it, which is a measure that we support. But we're not here to talk about T21 right now. We're here to talk about flavors. The biggest reason our customers have had success in putting out their cigarettes, and the biggest reason that I found success with smoke-free alternatives. Section 5 of HF 3032 intends really good things, but we need to discuss the impact. Flavors alone are not the problem, so a prohibition on them statewide does not get to the root of the issue. It's not simply their existence. We can achieve more with currently existing methods and models that we see in Bloomington, where Representative Carlson recently served, and in Minneapolis, where they put flavors into age-controlled stores like ours. This is the model that works. Data from the CDC clearly shows that flavors are not what drive youth experimentation. Meanwhile, flavors are the biggest attraction for current smokers who are looking to quit. If you take them out of gas stations and convenience stores, you put them behind our counters where we check IDs, this is the model that works. I did send a video to all of the members of the committee. It's a quick 60-second video that shows you exactly what it looks like to walk into one of our stores, ask for a product, get it, they scan your ID. Real short, real easy. Wanted to get that out there. In conclusion, you all stand at an important moment in public health in Minnesota history. You can lead the nation in smart regulation that protects vulnerable youth while supporting healthier choices for everyone. Governor Walz is on the record saying that prohibition is a bad strategy. So don't ban flavors. You heard it straight from the testifier earlier. They're not getting them from licensed retailers. Restrict flavors to age-controlled stores and commit to saving lives. Thank you.
Thank you for testimony. The next testimony is testifier Benny McWilliams, followed by Cap O'Rourke.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. Benny McWilliams, the owner of the E-Cig Lounge, St. Cloud, Way Park, Minnesota. Had a number of locations as well, but just currently shut down two of them, one in Monticello and in Rogers. I just want to say thank you for having me. I support not doing this flavor ban, but I do support regulations if they're sensible. We agreed. I'm also a part of the VTA Association. I am a member of that. I also represent the state of Minnesota in a lot of different ways. I'm very involved in our communities. I feel like I should have wore a white jacket today. I apologize. But I don't have a white jacket. I have a jacket that's just like everybody else. There's a lot of good testimonies, I believe, on both sides. I really do. My thing is education. I mean, honestly, how do we make this work together? I've been a big supporter of that from the very beginning. I've had numerous legislators in my shop who all have left with a different approach on the way I run my business. I'm very involved in my community. I also belong a part of many boards, Salvation Army Advisory Board, the United Way's 365 Business, North Star 23 Lodge in St. Cloud, to name a few. These businesses and organizations have asked me to be a part of their committees and boards because I support a good business. We have good people that come in that are struggling, like Sue Sint from Simply Vapor I just mentioned. My oldest client's 87 years old. She smoked for 55 years. She's on a 0 milligram of nicotine. She does not vape nicotine anymore. It's all hand and mouth. She yells at me when I try to tell her to quit that too. To the youngest that was 18, now it's 21, which is super hard to control at this moment because it's so new that our local law enforcement's having a hard time. I've talked to the chief, police of all of my counties in that surrounding area, along with the mayor. They're having a hard time deciphering it from the federal government's law. I mean, it's not even done the way we thought it was going to be done. It's confusing everybody. So what I'm trying to do is work alongside people in this industry, the medical industry, the gym facilities. I've got cards in all these places. I invite everybody in. How do I work along? We do our own survey. I've got a 120-day program that I'm going to present to some of these committees and these boards of big pharma to just regular health facilities. I'm trying to do what the UK has done. Let's make a difference. Let's make it work together. Let's regulate, but sensibly, we can do this together. So that's all. I have a lot more to say, but if anyone ever wants to chat with me on a one-on-one, please do so. I would love to invite you in and tell you what we're doing. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. The next testifier is Cap O'Rourke, followed by Nick Phelps.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for speaking. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I'm representing the Midwest Vapor Coalition. So I represent all the small retailers and manufacturers in Minnesota that make and sell vapor products. We are not affiliated with large tobacco companies, nor are we affiliated with Juul or pod system companies. So I want to clarify a few things. The vapor market has two essential components. We have open system and closed systems. Open systems are products in which you add liquid nicotine into a device, and these are primarily sold in vapor stores. And then we have pod systems, which are primarily sold in gas stations. Pod systems, on average, have a nicotine content of anywhere from 2.5 to 5%. Open systems sold in vape stores have a nicotine content anywhere from 0 to 1.8%. On average, our nicotine content is 0.3 to 0.6%. That is lower nicotine content than patches, gums, lozenges, and all of the pod systems that have been promulgated by big tobacco companies. The president's order banning flavors on pod systems, which just went into effect, does affect Juul, but as the author of the bill noted, you have things like puff bars. And those supposedly have a loophole. However, this product shouldn't be on the market. This product is right now is an illegal product and should not be on the market because it is not. It was produced after the August 8th, 2016 deadline. We have a number of regulations. Our industry is regulated by the federal level. They've just not done a good job either at the state or federal level of enforcing some of those regulations. By banning flavors, this isn't a hit to these small businesses. This is literally shutting them down. You are asking them to survive with less than, by only selling products that currently make up about 10 to 15% of their sales. You will be leaving the entire market up to Juul. Currently, Juul occupies about 65% of the market, and the vape stores make up the remaining 35%. If you do this, that 35% goes away. Juul will not go away. Two-thirds of Juul's products are tobacco flavored. So Juul will still be in business, and their products with high nicotine levels will still be in gas stations all around and still be accessible by kids. The other concern, you know, we talk about there's no conclusion that these products help people quit. The reality is the New England Journal of Medicine came out with a study last year that said vapor products are twice as likely as traditional quitting cessation devices to help people quit. Additionally, in the UK, where they have a number of regulations, and they do not have the youth usage that we have. They have all the flavors, but they've put a limit on nicotine levels. And they are currently handing out these products to all smokers, including those who are pregnant, to get them to quit smoking. There is a different way to regulate these products without killing the small businesses.
Thank you. For members' benefits, we have three more testifiers. Next is Nick Phelps, followed by Michael Troop Wahlberg.
Hello, my name is Nick Phelps. I am the owner of Own Premier Vaping in Ramsey. I quit smoking using vapor products, harm reduction technology. I worked in the vapor industry for more than 8 years and have owned my store for four of those years. During my 8 years in this industry, I have helped thousands of people make the switch to harm reduction technology. Vaping is 95% safer than smoking combustible cigarettes, as quoted by Public Health England. The UK embraces vaping so much, and they want their people to quit smoking so badly that they have opened vapor shops in a couple of hospitals. I have worked with many adults who have tried desperately to get away from cigarettes completely. They tried the nicotine gum, lozenges, and patches, but these products did not work for them. They were seeking a safer alternative to smoking combustible tobacco. I have worked with each of these adults individually to find a product that would suit their needs and have helped them successfully make the switch. I have over 2,500 customers in my database, and 95% of them use a flavored e-liquid other than tobacco flavored. If I was left with only tobacco flavored e-liquids, my shop and all others in Minnesota would shut down, and my customers would be going back to risk of being back to smoking cigarettes. The anti-nicotine and tobacco groups have used children as a shield for their arguments against flavors and paint them as victims. Contrary to what you have been told by the authors of this bill, the teens who persuade their older friends and even their parents to buy vapor products for them know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is nicotine in e-liquid, the same way they know that there is alcohol in beer. By possessing vapor products, they and the people who provide these products to them are breaking the law. My store has passed every compliance check that we have been subjected to by the local police department. We do not allow minors into our store at all, and we ID everybody. We are following federal regulation and will only sell to adults that are 21 years of age or older. If this flavor ban passes, you will be sending my customers and many others back into the hands of Big Tobacco or the black market to purchase flavored e-liquids, which has absolutely no regulation. Fears are not facts. Do not allow misinformation being spread about vaping to take away such an innovative harm reduction product from the adults that it was intended to serve. Cigarettes kill more than 480,000 Americans every year. Now that is what I would consider to be an epidemic.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Michael Troop Wahlberg, followed by Jesse Griffith.
Hello, my name is Michael Troop Wahlberg. I smoked cigarettes for over 20 years, and I quit a two-pack-a-day habit by vaping a grape soda flavor. I'm 48 years old, 20-year habit gone like that, grape soda. So when they tell you that, you know, it's for the kids, no, it's for us adults who don't like the tobacco flavor. We're trying to get away from tobacco flavor. We're trying to end the habit that pills, patches, gums didn't cure. You know, it didn't fix repeatedly. I've tried them. I've tried them all. Didn't work. I'm 10 years smoke-free now. Feel a lot better. Can't be any prouder about that. I've helped friends, family, countless friends get off cigarettes. And it's something that kills 480,000 Americans every single year. It's serious. And until vaping came along, people just fail and fail and fail and fail. The ban is misguided. It's unfair to adult smokers trying to quit. Vaping is an adult flavor technology made for adults. We innovated it to make it work for us, and it does. It's illegal for youth. Youth breaking the law do not need any more laws. It just doesn't work. They need supervision and parenting. I think that's kind of the law, actually. Banning flavors will create a huge and dangerous black market, and we can look at what happened to the illicit THC oils with Aveli. People are getting sick and dying because of that. That's all black market. People don't have the knowledge of which flavorings or ingredients should not be added. Most will simply buy at the next state over or online, but many will put themselves in danger by creating their own and trying to create their own, and they will suffer for it. We will see more deaths. Minnesota has over $250 million invested in tobacco companies. It's time we start investing in tobacco harm reduction and get smokers to quit. Flavored vaping is the answer, with 95% less harm and at least two times more effective than current NRT. It works. A vote for a flavor ban is a vote for Big Tobacco. Flavor bans will do nothing to keep adult products out of a minor's hands, and they may just go on to smoking deadly combustible cigarettes. So that's about it. If you're worried about the youth, better give lawbreakers community service, take away their car keys, supervise, Trying to childproof an adult world through bans is not the answer. Thank you for your time. I urge you vote no on H.R. 3032.
Thank you for your testimony. Our last testifier is Jesse Griffith.
Thank you. I brought some handouts. Is it okay if I pass them around?
You can just put them right there and the page will distribute them.
All right, thank you. Super. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. My name is Jesse Griffith, and I am the owner of a group of local vapor retail stores called Smokeless. We started our business shortly after I quit smoking using an e-cigarette in 2009. Today, Smokeless employs over 30 people, all of whom have also quit smoking using vapor products. Our mission is simple, to provide our customers with the best possible alternatives to combustible tobacco. I wanted to speak here today to provide the committee with some data about our company's sales. I believe that this data will be informative in the role that flavors play in adults' choice to use vapor products as an alternative to cigarettes. It may be worth noting that all of this data comes from a period subsequent to T21 becoming federal law, and that all these customers were 21 and older. During this period, we measured our e-liquid sales, which is the consumable part of a nicotine delivery system. 79% of those sales were products containing no tobacco flavoring. 9% of those sales were flavored tobacco, such as menthol or fruit and tobacco combination. 12% of those sales were straight tobacco flavors. This means that 88% of all of our e-liquid sales would be prohibited by this legislation, 88%. What is perhaps more important than this is that our sales data strongly suggests that customers who use flavors transition to lower nicotine strengths. Our data shows that customers who purchase plain tobacco e-liquid were nearly twice as likely to choose a nicotine strength higher than 0.6% when compared to non-tobacco flavored e-liquid customers. For reference, that 0.6% threshold is about 8 times less strong than the 5% nicotine in vapor products like Juul, which are frequently available at non-age restricted stores. Our customers also who purchased flavored tobacco e-liquid were 60% more likely to choose an extra high strength, thank you, over 2.5% when compared to non-tobacco flavored e-liquid customers. It's worth noting, however, that this extra high strength only represents 3%, or 1 over 33, of our total e-liquid sales. For comparison, in non-age restricted convenience stores, it is 100% of those products that are sold at that same strength range. I would invite you to consider this data handout I've provided and to vote against this legislation, which would not only cripple vape shops like mine, but leave Juul and its super high nicotine as the only option for adult smokers who wish to transition. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. This concludes the list of testifiers. As we have a floor session beginning in 5 minutes, the committee is adjourned.